is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
I don't know if any of you have ever seen the film Halloween, but I'm going to try a little imitation. Michael? Have you come home, Michael? It's Dr. Loomis. A poor imitation, perhaps, but I want to know from where your rage is coming. Is it because you're worried that KPFT is in trouble? That they need donations during their current fund drive? Michael, don't kill. Call 713-526-5738, or if you don't have the cell phone that you stole from the asylum, then use the laptop I know you took with you after your recent slaughter, and go to kpft.org, then donations, and tell the fine radio people how you plan to pay, and scroll to So What's Your Story as the program you've always enjoyed during our treatment. Again, Michael, that was 713-526-5738. Now, tell me where you are. A little detour from our usual Ray Lynch, because tonight on So What's Your Story, we celebrate Halloween and summon your generosity during this, our continued fall fun drive at KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, and along with an NPR quality team, Greg Audell, Drs. Mary Edgerton and Warren Holloman, media maven and engineer Nicole Rocherlin, and our newest member of the crew, Tatiana Gago, we revel in the power of story by placing the spotlight on remarkable tellers, both starters and stars, who share at least one thing in common. Each is an extraordinary person who engage us with stirring personal stories and treasured folktales by taking us on captivating journeys and then returning us safely to the present. And I have incredibly generous donors to thank already: Randy, Eric, Alfonso, Paul, Jay, Harwood, Frank, Pat, our very own Mary Edgerton, and I'm counting on a lot more before 9 o'clock. So What's Your Story is the only program originating from Houston that focuses on live storytelling, and calling in your donations to one of our steadfast volunteers at 713-526-5738 will fix our CD recorder so that I don't have to improvise and you could have actually heard the Halloween theme song. But still, it's a great way to tell us that weekly storytelling isn't going anywhere. And I'll thank you on the air unless you say otherwise. Or if you have hang-ups, I know that is a pun, and yes, I intended, on using the phone, follow the advice given by Dr. Loomis. Go to kpft.org, donations, choose your form of payment, and scroll to So What's Your Story as the program that you support, because listener-sponsored Pacifica relies on listeners to endorse the programs they love. That's how every program earns its keep. I believe our program is an icon for community radio, urging our friends and neighbors, common folks with extraordinary stories to tell, to help build a world of tolerance and understanding. It's no hyperbole. That's what storytelling does. 713-526-5738. Now, for tonight's Halloween Fun Fest. Blood-curdling, petrifying, menacing tales that will have you hiding under your blankies. And tonight's guests have the creepy tales to make it happen. Each have been on before, and when you listen to their telling skills, you'll know why they're back. Kiki Maroon is an international award-winning burlesque performer. She produces and stars in local and touring productions, including Kiki's Sordid Sideshow, the Burly Q Lounge, and the BCBC Burlesque and Circus Festival. She captivates audiences with blending classic striptease with clown antics, and her unparalleled style has charmed audiences across four continents, yielding her the 2015 People's Choice at the International Queen Burlesque Festival in Milan. Artistically ambidextrous, Kiki was named one of Houston's most colorful celebrities by Houston Chronicle. She's a recurring cast member of the Whiskey Brothers comedy podcast, co-host of the Outlaw Dave radio show, and frequent moth teller. Kiki's capacity for embracing any audience is nothing short of uncanny. Storyteller, educator, and author Jay Staley has appeared as a regional teller at the National Storytelling Festival and as a feature teller at Winter's Tale in Oklahoma City and Tejas in Denton. He's the author of Think Rather of Zebra, Dealing with Aspects of Poverty Through Story, and Short Tales, Tall Tales, and Tales of Medium Stature. Jay is one of those early members of the Houston Storytellers Guild, our proud sponsor, and taught storytelling and education at UH Clear Lake before I was smart enough to get him on board at UHD to teach our storytelling class. Kent Keith was influenced by a storytelling dad and Catholic mom, helping him find the power in human compassion. His gestures of compassion are seen in Fruit Share Houston, an organization founded by Kent and his wife Karen. It's about feeding our cities hungry that, in Kent's words, feeds his soul. His name is a story of sorts. Workmates call him Mel. Childhood chums call him Glenn. His nephews? Well, it's Uncle Gil. His dad got his attention by calling him Skeets. And Kent? Well, he decided on calling himself Kent. He's a moth champion, and Kent will showcase his wit, his use of words, and head-shaking talent at the Moth Grand Slam on November 3rd at Cullen Auditorium at the University of Houston. Here's a true Grand Slam. It looks like Moth director Elizabeth Sosa Bailey is going to give us two free tickets to those, the first donors, I should say, who's willing to donate $300. That's two tickets for the Grand Slam November 3rd at Cullen Auditorium Performance Hall. So get them while they're hot. Again, 713-526-5738. Thank you, Elizabeth. We love you for that. They're such our friends. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Okay,
good.
That was a long introduction. A lot to cover tonight.
It was wonderful.
I'm sorry
though.
About that, but I'm so glad to see you guys. So glad to see you guys. Let's get to tonight's tone, raw fear. Jay, what is the one thing that really scared you as a child, other than teaching at UHD one day?
I was scared of everything as a child. I had two big brothers that loved scaring me anytime they got the chance.
What'd they do?
Oh, snuck up behind me, talked at night in the dark, telling me crazy stories, put snakes in my bed.
Snakes in your bed? Real snakes?
Real snakes.
Oh, no, my God.
On. You're from Ohio.
Right.
There are no snakes in Ohio.
There are snakes in
okay.
Ohio.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm from there, too. I've never seen one, or maybe I have, and I don't want to admit it. Ken, how about you?
Well, Jay's two brothers had nothing on my three older sisters.
There we go. Your sister scared you?
And then two more came after that. Five sisters.
Oh, my God.
That's the scariest thing
in the
world.
Five sisters?
Yeah.
And you're the fifth of eight children, is that right?
Well, there were two boys, too, but they didn't scare me like those girls did.
Okay. What is it like being the fifth of eight children? That's a crazy question, I know, but like, are you like in the middle? Not really. Or are you? Or are you considered a middle child or maybe a little under? Or what's the hierarchy in a family like that?
Well, I was the oldest boy, so I was the favorite of everyone's.
Good. Good. That's all that matters, man. You're the favorite. All right. Kiki, I'm saving you for last because your greatest fear is the subject of your story, dolls, right?
Yeah.
Now, without giving a whole lot away, what is it about dolls that gets your heart racing?
Probably their tiny little hands ready to strangle you.
Tiny little hands ready to strangle you?
Yes.
Yeah. You know,
if I had to pick one thing.
But they're ready to strangle you. These
or you, all right, people, really.
Okay. But that's how you feel about dolls.
Yes.
Even though they might sit there comfortably, innocently, thumbling.
That's how they trick you.
They trick you. Oh, my gosh.
It's a 21st century thing, being scared of people with tiny little hands.
Tell us this story.
Ouch.
So when I was little, I had a huge fear of dolls. My grandma collected them, so they were all over her house. I would stare at them, and they would stare back at me. They never moved, but I always could feel it. It was about to happen. So I would sit and wait for like a blink or a head tilt, and it made me scared to look away. Then the movie came out. The worst movie to ever exist. Worse than Showgirls, worse than Howard the Duck, even worse than Leprechaun in the Hood. All three I also have stories about. Child's Play. A serial killer transfers his soul into a My Buddy and Me doll, which is a real doll sold in real stores. Still, I still remember the commercial. It would go, My Buddy and Me. So a terrible mother purchases this doll from a street peddler, because that's where the best toys come from, and gives it to her son, Andy, 6 years old, also referred to at the time as my age old. Andy has to watch Chucky murder everyone he loves, and even though Chucky is stabbed, burned alive, shot in the heart, and shot, sliced into a million pieces by an industrial fan, he keeps coming back. So the commercials would come on, and I would immediately just start crying and hide my face in my mom's arms. Now, I don't know if you guys know this, but kids are jerks. I was routinely referred to as a crybaby scaredy cat. Her mama wears an ugly hat, which I don't know what that means either. But every kid around me was so excited about this movie. Are you going to go watch Chucky? My mom said I can watch Chucky. I'm not allowed to watch Chucky, but I'm going to sneak in with Samantha and we're going to go watch Chucky. Why? Why would you want to do that? What's wrong with you? What if after you watch it, he knows you believe in him and sneaks into your house? That's basic Santa Claus rules. Why invite that? I don't like scary things. To this day, I don't watch scary movies. I don't do panic rooms. I don't like haunted houses. I don't get it. Why would I pay someone for fear? I'm one of those people who is blessed with a constant, overwhelming fear of everything. I am pretty sure I'm going to die every single day. I don't think it would be fun to pay someone and go to a house and be terrified. Like, oh, here, take my money. Let me run down this dark hallway. Chase me and pretend you're going to rape and murder me, okay? That's not fun. No. If you're even capable of going to a haunted house, I don't like you. I just assume that you are one of those healthy individuals who grew up in a safe neighborhood and is just like visiting my fear. I'll stand outside judging you while you wait in line, like an African kid in a rundown village who has to watch tourists take selfies by my lake/bathroom. So, everyone wanted to watch this murder doll movie, and I don't want to be a loser and made fun of forever, so when my cousins say, we're going to go watch Chucky, want to come? I said yes, because I'm a cool kid. 2 hours. I spent 2 hours trying to drown out the screams. I kept telling myself, that's just like 4 episodes of Full House, right? I closed my eyes and tried to run through an entire episode, remembering every joke, subplot, laugh track, commercial. Just closed my eyes. You got it, dude. Cut it out. The McRib is back. My buddy and me. No! So the movie ends. Chucky is burned alive. And I think, oh, thank God. That's the last we'll ever see of him. We leave the theater and my older cousins are complaining. It wasn't that scary. It was lame. My eyes burn from holding back tears. I am permanently traumatized. But I agree with them. Because I'm a cool kid. I'm a cool kid. So I don't see them again until my grandma's birthday. We would meet at her house for every holiday, and I remember being in a crowded living room, sitting on the floor, eating cake while she unwrapped presents with 9 aunts, 10 uncles, and 56 cousins, the entire party was spent watching her unwrap all those presents. So my aunt handed her a giant box, she unwrapped it, and I screamed louder than I have ever screamed in my life. The My Buddy and Me doll. They got her a My Buddy and Me doll. I ran through and over 56 kids, scream crying, spilling cake and punch everywhere. My poor grandma had no idea what was going on. My mom's trying to explain that I'm freaking out because of Chucky, while also trying to calm me down, asking, "Baby, are you okay? Did you pee your pants again?" I was not a cool kid anymore. My grandma got rid of the doll, and I was teased about it until, like, yesterday. I'm not scared of Chucky anymore, but I am terrified of pretending to be cool. So, lesson learned?
Very good. Are you really afraid of everything?
Oh, yes.
Terribly,
yes.
So that wasn't a joke. You're totally paranoid.
Oh, no, I don't go to haunted houses. I don't watch scary movies. I feel it too strongly. I have nightmares. I can't do it.
Oh, where did that all come from?
Maybe the tiny doll hands.
Tiny doll hands.
If I had to pick.
You warned us. Well, I'm thinking Chucky, because that was one scary doll.
Oh, he was the worst.
Chucky, right? Mm-hmm. Chucky? I don't like him. Just something about him. So, of course, something about him. He was a serial killing doll.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you not like him? Right.
He never died.
Dolls become who we want them to be. And that sometimes is very scary. You talked about what their hands can do. Right?
But, and their beady little eyes.
Their what?
Their beady little eyes.
Beady little eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sounds like half the people with whom I work. Little hands. Beady little eyes.
Careful.
And, I think I'll probably stop right there. But you want to hear something really scary? It's tuning into a program and hearing... That's right. Nothing at all. And without your help, that's exactly what can happen. 713-526-5738. Jam KPFT can keep that from happening. Or you can go online to kpfd.org. Donations. And then you can scroll over to So What's Your Story? As your favorite way to spend an hour every Wednesday night. And, you know, the other guy's not going to do it. I started the show as an open journal, and a listener said, "You know, Hank, you know what? We want it every week." Well, we have stories about human loss, miraculous recoveries, a murdered child, students showcasing skills that leave you in awe, and awe-inspiring tales that stretch the boundaries of the human heart, fables and folk tales and enchantment for all. And to keep it all going, just give us a call. I'm such a lousy poet. Just give us a call. 713-526-5738. But you know, my God, I try. Jay, scariest movie you ever saw?
Scariest movie I ever saw.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask Kiki. She doesn't watch movies.
You know, I'm kind of like Kiki. I don't go to scary movies.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I can remember Chiller Theater in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Chiller Theater on Friday night?
The
kids would all get together to watch Chiller Theater. I'd head to another part of the house. I didn't want to be involved.
Oh, well, listen.
You got a radio show full of babies.
Bunch of babies, I really do. Call an ambulance. Okay. Kent, is there a movie that petrified you enough? Obviously, you know there is one because you have a story about it, right?
You've
got a story about it. And, you know, I love stories about movies. And the reason is because when we tell a story, it sort of unfolds like a movie. You know what I mean? It unfolds like a movie. So when we tell a story about a movie, they always intrigue me because I've got a few myself. We're fascinated. Let's hear it, my friend.
Flying monkeys. You all are acting
like a bunch of flying monkeys. That's what Miss Meyer, our sixth grade teacher, said to us when we were acting out. But flying monkeys in the movie, that was supposed to be the scariest thing in The Wizard of Oz. But all I could think about was John Delaney or Harold Frettheimer, Kit Stoutenberg, one of my classmates. They weren't scary. So the flying monkeys in Wizard of Oz wasn't scary. So that movie, it didn't scare me. Chainsaw Massacre. You know that chainsaw that he had, that Leatherface had? I know a thing or two about chainsaws. And I'll tell you what, that chainsaw was like some little chainsaw you'd see at Kmart or something. It wasn't a Still. It wasn't a Husqvarna. That movie didn't scare me. Jason in the hockey mask in Halloween. I grew up in Minnesota. So hockey mask, I saw plenty of guys with hockey masks, and every time they took those hockey masks off, there's a doofus face behind it. So Jason, all I could think is that he had some doofus face behind that mask. That didn't scare me. But I tell you what did. and it grabbed me by my Catholic neck, and it didn't let me go. The Exorcist. I saw it in college. I saw it with Craig Jones. Craig and I came out of the theater after the movie, and we were both ashen. And he said, "Hey, you want to come and just spend the night with me?" I thought, hell yeah, I don't want to go home alone. So I went to Craig's house. We stayed up as long as we could because I wasn't about to go to sleep and have those demons in my dreams. I finally fall asleep, and I'm tossing and turning. And I turn over, and I see Craig in the bed next to me, and I swear I saw his eyes roll in the back of his head, just like Linda Blair's did. Now, you could tell me that, you know, those eyes were some Hollywood trick or that projectile vomit scene, that was just pea soup, but it didn't matter. That movie just had its way with my Catholic fear. The next day, I spent the day just kind of goofing around with some buddies, and we stayed out late, and I came home. I walked in the front door. I walked through the kitchen. I walked down the hall toward the bedrooms, and I saw the lights on in my bedroom. I go in there, and my brother Andy, who I shared a room with at the time, he was sitting up in bed, all the lights on in the bedroom, and he's reading comic books. And he had that same look on his face that I had the night before with Craig. I said, "Hey, Andy, did you go see The Exorcist?" "Yeah, I did." Andy and I sat up all night reading comics with the lights on. There's more than one way to keep that demon at bay.
Yeah, you know, The Exorcist scared the hell out of me, too. And this is honest to God truth. I was in Washington a couple of weeks after it was filmed. And I had a friend that, you know, went to Georgetown University. I was staying with him, and he wanted to show me the stairs where, you know,
it happened.
Where the young priest flew out of that window. And I got to tell you something. I said, "I am not going near those stairs. I'm not going near those stairs." But they're just stairs. I don't care. I'm not walking near those stairs. I had nightmares about those stairs. But, you know, flying monkeys, that didn't bother you. The flying monkeys did bother me in The Wizard of Oz when you mentioned that. That kind of scared me. Everybody know, you've seen The Wizard of Oz, Kiki. You know, we're all a little over 25, so you'll have to forgive me if I ask you if you've seen the movie.
I'm a little over 25.
Okay, you have seen The Wizard of Oz?
I have seen The Wizard of Oz.
Nicole, have you? Oh, here we go.
Of course, my daughter, it was her favorite movie ever, and I've watched it a million times.
Well, you didn't know Bob Dylan, so I was just asking, for God's sakes. Okay. Can you imitate any of the characters in The Wizard of Oz? Because I want a contest. I'm not kidding you. I won an Oz contest 1990. No kidding.
For being the witch?
I even have a little plaque just for being able to imitate them all. Well, why didn't you say so in the first place?
No, only part that I cared about was...
Auntie M! Auntie M!
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
There's no place like home. Yes, Uncle Henry. Okay, good. I didn't want to show off. But
show off.
You win again.
Mm-hmm. I know. Tatiana, what was your fondest memory of Halloween?
When I was about 8 or 9 years old, my
Aren't
dad and I
Aren't you not
would
much
always...
older than that now? Or what? Okay. You're...
Shade.
Okay.
We would always go to West U because that's where the best candy is. I always had maybe 4 or 5 pounds of candy. And there was one Halloween where my dad had a hole in his shoe. So he had a bunch of pebbles, and, our feet were hurting for the rest of the night. And at the end, we got pizza, so that was probably the best one.
That was it? Okay, what is your favorite Halloween candy? We're going to talk about that later, but I thought I'd jump on that now. Do you have one?
Twix.
Really? Yeah. You know, Twix is one of the more popular ones. I'm not sure why it's half cookie. I mean, is that really make it a candy?
And it has caramel in it.
There's the big question. I mean, if it's half cookie, is it a cookie or is it a candy?
It's the best of both worlds. Why does that upset you?
Oh, it doesn't upset me. I just thought I'd offer that for pontification. I just thought I might want to talk about that a little bit. Nicole, how about you?
My best Halloween memory was I was about 14 maybe, and I dressed up like this giant baby, and I even had this big old pacifier around my neck, and I had the bib, I had this pamper, I had the shoes, and my dad always called me his baby girl, so I really showed him what a baby girl was.
Aw, that's adorable. Listen, tell our listeners where all of their fear of storytelling can be removed, because some of them are just terrified of, you know, telling a tale.
Ooh, I'm scared.
Oh, there's the song. There's the song. I'm so glad you're playing that. Let's imagine I did that invitation after this part, and
you
then
can do it again.
It could be wonderful.
You can do it,
Michael.
Again.
Is that you, Michael? Have you come home, Michael? Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Well, there are lots of places listeners can go without fear, and let's start with the Houston Storytellers Guild, who hold Story Swaps the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, and that's 1500 Sunset across from Rise. Also, go to their website, www.houstonstorytellers.org, for all of the fun happenings like Skyline Screamers on October 28th and Telebration on November 18th. And for the full set of every So What's Your Story show since 2008, just go to radio program, click, and enjoy. And don't forget our friends at The Mob every second Tuesday of the month at Warehouse Live. And not only will one of tonight's guests, Kent Keith, be a teller at the Grand Slam on November 3rd, but so will several of our guests, and Greg and Hank. You know what? What else do our listeners need to know, Tatiana?
I love this background.
Thanks,
music.
Nicole. A reminder to our listeners that we can see many of our program clips on YouTube. Now, let's talk about Facebook. We want everyone to follow us on our Facebook page, share our page with your friends, and we'd love it if you'd like us on the way out. In fact, we're on Facebook Live right now. Also, our team wants to hear from you with program ideas and more. So tell us your thoughts, and we'll get back to you.
You guys are so articulate. You know that? I just thought I'd mention that.
You were.
Really, nice job.
You are a professor.
That's what I wanted you to say next. Thank you, Nicole and Tatiana. Also wanted to mention that award-winning Texas teller Donna Ingham, Jay, you know her, she's magnificent, is going to be at Hickory Hollow at Washington and Center Street on Saturday, November 18th from 11 to 12:30. There's no cost. Just buy lunch at this Houston institution. Donna's also going to be my guest on November 15th, and you're not going to want to miss that. But why would you want to miss any show? This is Hank Rubicek with Nicole Rocherlin on the boards, ushering in the night when witches go riding and black hats are seen. The moon laughs and whispers, 'tis Halloween, with guest storytellers Kiki Maroon, Kent Keith, Jay Staley, only on KPFT's So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. You know, despite many believing Halloween is about... Okay, shut the music off now. Thank you very much. We get the idea. The CD works. Okay. Despite a lot of people believing that Halloween is about satanic rituals and spirits hovering in a purgatory-like state commemorating the dead, it's really about fun for most of us, you know? Jay, your story has a traditional focus. Ghosts. Told through a cultural lens, I guess that's safe to say, right?
That's right.
Before telling us a story, give us a brief feel for anything that we need to know, and then Nicole's going to play a little bit of a song to get us set up.
This story I'm going to share tonight is an ancient story, hundreds and hundreds of years old, comes out of a Japanese mythology. It's a Japanese ghost tale. It's called Black Hair. It's a traditional Japanese tale, and it is, I'm going to tell it as it is told by Brenda Wong Aoki, who is one of the wonderful nationally known storytellers here in the States.
Beautiful. And this song that you want us to listen to by Alison Krauss, Ghost in the House?
Yes.
Yeah.
I one of the things this story always reminds me of is that most of the ghosts that haunt us, I believe, are not ghosts from some other place or from some other spirit realm. They're the ghosts that we create for ourselves in our own lives. And oftentimes they come back at different times in our lives to haunt us.
Nicole, let's listen to this a little bit.
I don't answer the door.
Long ago, there lived in Kyoto a samurai who was reduced to poverty by the ruin of his lord. The samurai had the good fortune to be married to a kind and beautiful wife with clear, fair skin, soft brown eyes, and long, luxurious hair, blue-black as the night, shining as the stars, and soft as a cloud. Day after day, the samurai sat drowning his sorrows in his sake cup. The samurai never noticed how his wife went hungry so that he could eat his fill. One day the samurai looked up. "Huh," he said, sulking. "I lose everything, and now I lose all face by wearing rags. How I wish I had a new kimono." The next day the samurai awoke at noon as usual and was just about to begin drinking his sake when he heard, "Zuka, Zuka, Zuka." Curious, he got up and followed the sound until he came to the little room where his wife was working. Sliding open the paper door, he saw her there with her hair cut as short as a little boy's, weaving her long silken tresses into cloth from which to make him a kimono. Day after day she wove, never stopping to eat or sleep, until one day, pale and worn, she came out of the little room carrying the most wonderful kimono, blue-black as the night, shining as the stars, and soft as a cloud. This she gave to the samurai. "What kind of kimono is this?" he roared. "It has no crest on it. What kind of samurai would I be with no crest?" Trembling with fear, his wife answered, "My love, we are without a master. We have no crest." "Then make one up," said the samurai, with one hand raised to strike her. "Make me a symbol of great power." So his wife took the kimono back into her room. She had no money with which to buy dye or thread, so she bit her little finger until blood ran crimson. Then, in the most exquisite hand, she wrote in blood the symbol of Kokoro, heart. This she gave to the samurai. "Why have you written this on my kimono?" snarled the samurai, his black eyes hard and cold. "Will you ask for a symbol of great power? The greatest power in all the world is that of a good heart," answered his good wife. "Huh," said the samurai. Nevertheless, he was very pleased. You see, he thought that the crest written in blood made him look brave. He went out into the street to show himself off, and as he was strutting up and down the street, he chanced upon a magnificent procession with 150 bannermen, followed by 300 samurai in full armor. At the corner of the procession, at the center of the procession, on a white stallion sat a fair maid with long hair, laughing eyes, and sharp white teeth. "My, how handsome you look in that new kimono," purred the fair lady. I was just taking a break from my official duties," boasted the samurai. "Ah," said the fair maid, "not only are you very handsome, but you're also official. My father can use a man like yourself. My father is the Lord of Nagoya. Come with me. Show me your worth." The samurai bowed three times, raced back to his poor house where his wife waited, and roared, "Draw me a bath! Help me look my best! I now have an important position with the Lord of Nagoya. I am to leave immediately." His good wife was heartbroken. Nagoya is far from Kyoto. When the samurai was dressed, he looked at her and said, "I'm not coming back till your hair grows out. You look like a boy." And he was gone. Now, the samurai soon became a high official with the Lord of Nagoya, and the maid of Nagoya persuaded him to marry her. Now the man cannot have two wives, so he sent a messenger to Kyoto telling his good wife he had divorced her. The date was the 10th day of the 9th moon. He married the maid, but wealth does not make one rich. His new wife proved to have a bad temper. She cared neither for his happiness nor his peace of mind. She cared only about sweet rice cakes and come to bed now, my little official. And every night she hissed, show me your worth. The samurai was not happy. Months passed, years passed. The samurai's new wife had long since lost the glow of youth. Her body was plump with rice cakes. The only thing that remained of her former beauty was her sharp white teeth. Show me your worth. The samurai was miserable. One night as he lay in bed unable to sleep, he heard, Zuka, Zuka, Zuka. Was it a servant passing in the night? Suddenly, as though with a wave of a great tsunami, he was overcome with yearning for his good wife. He remembered her kind, gentle ways. Then he remembered the kimono, made of her own hair, emblazoned with a crest written in her blood. The samurai searched for that kimono. Finally, in a room filled with things long since forgotten, he found it, blue-black as the night, shining as the stars, and soft as a cloud. The samurai decided then and there to go back to his good wife. He marched into his second wife's chambers and divorced her on the spot. Clad only in a blue-black kimono and riding his fastest stallion, the samurai raced back to Kyoto. The journey was hard. He was no longer a young man. 20 years had passed since he had last been that way. He reached Kyoto at nightfall. It was the 10th day of the 9th moon. The moonlight made everything visible. Following the crooked streets, he came to the little alley where he had once lived. He found the house quite easily, but it had a different look. It was not the poor but tidy house he remembered. He knocked on the front door. When no one answered, he slid it open and stepped inside. The front room was empty, matless. A chilly wind blew through the holes in the floor. The moon shone through tears in the paper walls. The house looked abandoned. Still, the samurai was determined to search each and every room. Finally, he came to the little room that had been his wife's favorite resting place. Noticing a glow within, he approached the door. Sliding open the paper door, he saw her there. She had not changed in 20 years. Her skin was clear and fair, her eyes soft and brown, and her hair had grown back again, blue-black as the night, shining as the stars, and soft as a cloud. He lay down beside her and fell asleep. When the samurai awoke, sunlight was streaming through the tears in the paper walls, but he found to his amazement that he was not lying on the soft bed, but on moldy, rotten flooring. Was it a dream? No, there she lay. She was sleeping. He bent to kiss her cheek. The sleeper had no face. Beside him lay the corpse of a woman, a corpse so decayed that little remained but bones crawling with insects and long, tangled black hair. Screaming, the samurai ran into the street, bumping into an old man. What's wrong? Asked the man. Unable to speak, the samurai pointed to the house. But no one lives there, the man said. That house belonged to the wife of a samurai who left her to marry another. Heartbroken, she grew sick. She died on the 10th day of the 9th moon, 20 years ago.
Ooh, good story. Good story. Kiki, this is for you. Good story. Now, that comes from where?
That comes, it's from a collection of Japanese ghost tales that's about 5 centuries old.
Whew, nice. I want to thank Paul, and I forgot to mention Kim a little bit earlier for their generous donations, 713-526-5738. We are in the middle of a fun drive, and we want you to help us stay on the air, because what we do is so critically important, so critical. Kiki, I'm just going to come out and say it. You used to think you were a witch. Which witch were you? Which witch was it?
I was probably closer to the bewitched, cute, fun witch.
The bewitched?
We've already established. No scary.
Okay. Right. Yeah. So you were like Billy Burke in The Wizard of Oz? I told you, I'm not the witch of Oz. No, that's not. Okay.
Sorry.
Never mind. Okay. For reference, we don't really have a witch in mind, right? You just.
No, not
so
much.
Kind of a generic witch. Okay. Well, take us on a ride on your broomstick.
So like you said, when I was little, I thought I was a witch. My parents bought a book set called The Alphabet of Science. Each book was a different letter full of cartoons and information on that subject. And my favorite was M, Marie Curie. She was a Polish chemist who pioneered research in radioactivity and the first woman to win the Nobel Prize. I couldn't read yet, so all I saw were drawings of a woman mixing chemicals, surrounded by beakers, poofs of different colored smoke floating around her. Having never seen a female scientist on TV, I assumed she was a witch. I'm sure we could turn this into a commentary on women's roles in Hollywood, but for the sake of the story, let's just say I was stupid. I would carry that book with me everywhere, and I called it my spell book. I would mix baking soda and vinegar. It would bubble over, and I would, like, baby cackle over it. At stoplights, I would wave my hand over and over, willing it to turn green, very pleased with myself when it changed. And I would even correctly guess what cartoon would play next on TV. That the schedule was the same every single day was irrelevant to me. I was a witch. Then in middle school, my mom went through this phase where she researched and adopted several different religions. Her getting into Wicca was officially the only cool thing she ever did in my goth kid eyes. By getting into Wicca, I mean that she went to Borders and bought books with titles like The Kitchen Witch and Everyday Magic for the Busy Woman. Everyday Magic for the Busy Woman would give a long descriptive spell like creating a fortune talisman. On a Friday during a waxing moon, assemble 5 pumpkin seeds, 3 cinnamon sticks, 1 gold coin, a green candle, and basil oil. Take the candle and rub tempered basil onto it while visualizing your prosperity. Light the candle with your right hand. Place the pumpkin seeds, cinnamon sticks, and gold coin in the green cloth, folding over exactly 3 times, chanting while you work. Dollar bill, work your will. Pumpkin seeds, do your deeds. Cinnamon sticks, do the trick. Bring needed money and bring it quick. The corresponding page would say, but of course the modern woman has no time for that, so just try sprinkling cinnamon sugar in your shoes. Make every step as prosperous as the last. What? I don't think that's how magic works. I think that's how ants work. If cinnamon toast shoes are not your thing, there were tons of other magic hacks, like chewing orange peels to attract love, gross, or rubbing black jelly beans behind your ears for protection, because licorice is very powerful. Looking back, this sounds crazy, but at the time I was so down. I was a gawky, insecure nerd, and rubbing jelly beans all over my face was the only thing giving me any sense of control. So I took the book to school because I wanted to show off. Nobody thought it was cool. Not only did they not think it was cool, one of my supposed friends told the teacher that I brought a devil-worshipping book to class. This is where I should explain that the cover featured a woman resembling Martha Stewart wearing a pink apron and a black witch hat. Demonic. It didn't matter. It said witch on it, so to the principal's office. They called my mom and she showed up furious. She'd asked me before if I stole her book and of course I said no. But her anger was quickly redirected when the principal said, "We cannot have your daughter infecting other children's minds with this evil." "Excuse me," she said. "This is a public school. If I wanted an opinion on religion, I would ask for it." "Well, perhaps you should ask. She clearly needs some direction if she's experimenting with this filth." My mom lost it. You know the stereotype of the ghetto Mexican girl about to get into a fight? Imagine that. I swear she was about to take her earrings off while yelling about freedom of religion, freedom from religion, educator overreach, and for good measure threw in a screw the PTA too. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. When you threaten to lawyer up, principals back down real fast. The funny thing is, my mom didn't even care. She wasn't really Wiccan. She just saw someone reading tarot cards on Sally Jesse Raphael one day and thought, "Oh, that sounds interesting." She wasn't worried about my religion being oppressed. She was worried about my mind being closed, about someone blindly labeling good and evil and me being forced to follow it.
So I'm definitely not a witch, and she's definitely no Marie Curie. But to me, that day, my mom was definitely magic.
Really nice. It was a story about your mom.
Yeah. Well, you know, witches, mom, same thing.
Witches, mom, same thing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All moms. Yeah. You didn't hear that. That was great. You had a little spell book, right? A little spell book.
My spell books.
But it was in a book, so you could call it Spellbound, kind of. Couldn't you? I didn't even mean for that to be a joke, but I guess it was pretty funny. Yeah, I should. Could you get me a job as stand-up?
Oh, God, I'm trying to get myself a job, man.
Okay,
it's not easy.
Okay. Can't you have a recurring dream? I got a lot of them, too, about, you know, elephants attacking me while running backwards, but it doesn't seem to be as interesting as this one. But you've got a recurring dream that you'd rather forget, but you can't. And at least right now you can't, because it's the next story, right? You got this recurring dream. What is she doing back there? What are you doing? She's having fun.
Wow.
I don't know.
Dream time.
She's got a little too much latitude back there. I don't know.
So I was at my bedroom window. I had the window screen in my hand. I ripped the window screen off of its frame, and I was getting ready to jump out the bedroom window. And I was doing all of this sound asleep. My brother is in the room with me, my brother Pete, and he's yelling at me. I don't know it. He's yelling, Kent, what are you doing? And with all the commotion, with the ripping of the screen, and with my brother shouting, my dad comes from the other end of the hallway, and he comes into the room, and he wraps his arm around me, and he says, Kent, wake up. And I woke up startled, like, what am I doing here? And there, my brother and my dad are telling me, if we didn't come and get you, you were jumping out that window. So I told him about the dream. And in the dream, the walls of the room are closing in on me, and they're going to crush me. And if I don't get out that window, I'm going to die. In that dream haunted me for 10 or 12 years of my life. That first one happened when I was 17 or 18. I was still living at home. Then I had one a couple years after that. And my brother Pete and I at that time shared a bunk bed. I was in the bottom bunk. And this time the bunk bed is closing in around me. And the only way I can get out is by making a crack between the bed and the wall. So I start shimmying up between the wall and the bed. I'm scratching. My whole chest is getting scratched up. I get up to the top. My brother's looking at me. He's scared out of his mind because I look like a maniac. And I wake up confused and discombobulated. And we kind of laugh at each other, and I go back down and I go back to sleep. Then I had another one of these in a bunk bed at a friend's house. Now, by this time, you'd think maybe I'd quit sleeping in the bottom of the bunk. But I slept in the bottom of the bunk at Johnny's house. Johnny was in the top bunk. I was in the bottom. The dream comes to me again. I'm being squished by this bed, and I got to get out of it. So I take the entire top bunk and I lift it off of its frame. It comes crashing down to the ground. Johnny falls out of the bed. He's looking at me like I'm a maniac. I'm looking at him like I don't know what the hell's going on. And then I had another one. And this one, who would become my wife, invited me to sleep over for the first time. So Pam invites me into her bed. And the head of the bed, there's a window. And the window has a room-darkening shade that covers the window. So in the middle of the night, the walls of her room start closing in on me in the dream. I stand up in the bed, and I go over to that room-darkening shade, and I rip it totally off the wall. She wakes up, frightened. I look at her like, sorry, not really sure what happened. And I guess I didn't scare her that much because she still married me. And then I had my last one. And this time in the dream, I'm not hysterical. I'm calm. And in my calmness, in the dream, I see a window or a door or an opening, and I know that if I can make it to that opening and go out, that I'll be safe. And I go over to that window calmly. I walk out the window, and I've never had the dream again.
Wow. Do you write down your dreams? Did you write down your dreams after you, when you wake up, or how do you remember them?
Well, you know, those were pretty easy to remember. Mm-hmm. But I did. I went through a period of writing down all my dreams, and I quit it because it seemed like I was spending half the night up writing down dreams.
Yeah. I used to do that, and that's exactly it. They were so strange. And there were, when you read them over, sometimes you think, well, maybe they're not as strange when I read them over. Excuse me. But they are. But this was so, when this unfolded in your mind, excuse me, it is a, why do you think it's recurring? That's the question. Why recurring? Why do you have this one over and over again?
Well, I could psychobabbleize that. And
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it seems like something in my life was constrictive and keeping me from doing what I want. And I did in that period. There were some things that I overcame in my personal life that kind of put that to bed. Then,
I had a recurring dream, sort of like that, except it was when I was a principal, and I'd be working at my desk and taking stacks of paper out of my inbox, and every time I got stacks of paper out of my inbox, someone else would come through the door and put another stack of paper in the inbox.
Well, being a principal,
so I'd work all night long. It was horrible.
That's terrorist.
That's like one long nightmare. Yeah. My God. On and on and on. Yeah. Teaching does that. It gives you a lot of recurring episodes.
It does. It does
indeed.
It really
does. It really does. Kent, you getting ready for the Grand Slam November 3rd? Exciting, huh? It's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is.
Going to be great. Going to be great. Kiki, tell us a little bit about your website. Tell us where we can find you. You are all over the place.
I am. If you go to kikimaroon.com, it has links to all of my socials. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. But the biggest thing is it has my show dates on there. I produce a monthly burlesque and stand-up comedy show at Warehouse Live, same place that
same
the Moth
place.
Is. So we're there every month. Totally different lineup every month. Then in January, we have the big show. It's the Big Circus Burlesque Festival. That's an international event. Performers from all over the world come to Houston for that one. It's a huge thing. And then I have my separate stand-up comedy things all listed there under the dates also.
Beautiful. Jane, you just came back from where?
I was in Jonesboro, Tennessee at the National Storytelling Festival.
Storytelling capital of the world.
Absolutely
incredible. What were you doing there?
I was sitting in these huge circus tents with 500, 600, 700 story listeners listening to amazing stories from storytellers really around the world.
Yeah, it's great. Storytelling, you know, some people think, oh, it's brand new. It's new stuff. You know, I was doing a workshop at Exxon a few weeks ago, and they said, you know, we love this storytelling stuff. It's so new. And I tell them, well, yeah, if you want to consider 2000 BC new, it's been around for centuries. And it's just a great way of plugging in to each other without plugging anything in. And it's kind of unfair to ask this in about a 30-second response, but, you know, the show's been on the air for so long, and all of you know that this is such a labor of love for me, and all of you have been on before. What does it mean to have a program like this in Houston? Kiki, what do you think? I know that's a loaded question.
Oh, my
but,
God, it is. Yeah. No, I just think it's so special because, you know, going to the Moth is always, since the first time I went, it was so exciting to hear people going up and speaking to strangers and connecting with hundreds of people at once. And then to come on the air and know that you're doing that with hundreds or thousands of people at once, to have that kind of connection, that's not something that you can get anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Kent, what do you think?
Well, for me, it's if we're nothing, we're our story. And this is a chance to share that story.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful way of phrasing it. I think that we're all born as a blank page. And, you know, every episode that we experience is a new page.
Mm-hmm. I think we shape meaning in our life through our stories. And we work on our narrative as we tell our stories. And sometimes we have to change that narrative. I know I've had come to these points in my life where I said, you know, my story's not working for me anymore.
Rewire.
I understand.
This is what we're doing. We're just working on that narrative.
But
all the time.
Saying the story out loud makes you rethink that whole thing.
Sure does. Yeah.
Just want everybody to know that Mary Edgerton is going to be hosting Air Force Academy English professor Rich Johnson and Greg Audell as they tell stories about personal trajectories, pivotal moments that transform their lives, only on So What's Your Story, KPFT 90.1 FM. That'll be coming up next week. But right now, this is Hank Rubicek with guest tellers Kiki Maroon, Jay Staley, and Ken Keith with Tales from the Crypt, sort of, right? Kind of, sort of. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, your favorite Halloween candy, who's got one? You said Twix?
No,
well,
I was just agreeing with her. What are they called? The crispy? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
The kind of, they got like, like the little Rice Crisp in them.
Are you afraid of all other candies too? Is that why you can't remember
this one? It's a red wrapper.
Kit Kat?
No, it's a red wrap. Crackle. That's what it's called.
Crackle?
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Crackle.
Crackle.
And,
they're delicious.
And your favorite?
Mine is caramel apple with razor blades.
Oh, God. Caramel apple with razor blades. Well, we're going to read, actually, we're going to sing about my favorite story. You know Jimmy Crackhorn?
Yes.
Oh, for God's sake.
I said yes.
These youngsters on. Okay. One, two, three.
Give me candy corn and I won't cry. Give me candy corn and I won't cry. Give me candy corn and I won't cry. Your candy better not suck.
Yay, very good. Thank you. Thank you so much. That was important for me because, after all, I don't know why. I just thought it might be fun because it is Halloween. It is one of the fun times of the year. You know, we're about ready to end, and I just want everybody out there to know how much we appreciate you tuning into the What's Your Story every week. We never take it for granted. You know, we used to do it once a month. Now we do it every week. We started off on Monday mornings at 6. That was a tough time to get guests. And then we went to 10 o'clock on Thursday nights. That was not exactly boomer friendly. We were asleep by then, and now we've got this coveted hour at 8 o'clock on Wednesdays.
Wonderful.
And I really just want everybody to know how magnificent this is. Thank you, Ken Keith, Kiki Maroon, and Jay Staley for gracing our studio once again. Each of you tell stories with the kind of effortless style and skill most can only envy. Be ready to be invited again and again. We're almost out of time, but it only takes 90.1 seconds to call 713-526-5738 with your pledge. We're going to end with a Halloween classic, Witch Doctor by David Seville. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah.
Ting, tang, wada, bing, bang.
Stay exactly where you are because Wild Bill, the Vinyl Avenger, is going to be here dropping the needle on the classics you love. You make KPFT a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and treasure what you hear. You keep loving a great story, my friends, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. The team at So What's Your Story will be ever, ever be reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Enjoy and peace. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ding, dang, walla, walla, bing, bang. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ding, dang, walla, walla, bang, bang. You've been keeping love from me just like you were a miser. And I'll admit I wasn't very smart. So I went out and found myself a guy that's so much wiser. And he taught me the way to win your heart. My friend, the witch doctor, he taught me what to say. My friend, the witch doctor, he taught me what to do. I know that you'll be mine when I say this to you, oh baby. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bang-bang. Come on and ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang.
Celebrate the streets of Houston this fall with Cigna Sunday Streets. During Cigna Sunday Streets, a major thoroughfare is closed to motorized traffic. Without cars on the road, you'll be able to enjoy walking, running, dancing, cycling, and socializing with friends and family. Cigna Sunday Streets promotes being physically active, meeting your neighbors, and exploring your community. Fall 2017 Sunday Street event dates have been set. Mark your calendars for November 5th and December 3rd. Please help spread the word. Visit HoustonSpecialEvents.org for event locations and hours, bilingual information, fun facts, and more. KPFT Houston.
creative use of sound to transport you from your home or car to a desert in the Middle East or the middle of a concert hall. It's refined radio for people who want to be engaged by stories and music, minus the shock value that commercial media often uses to try to get your attention. At KPFT, the bottom line isn't profit, it's public service. And that's why we're asking for your gift today, to help keep KPFT Public Radio on the air. You do that by giving a gift that reflects the value you receive from KPFT and an amount that fits your budget. Our volunteers can help you decide when you call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738. You can also help on our secure website at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
You are.